Welcome to Hype episode 183. My name is Selena. I'm here with Pam for another slightly delayed, but for very good reasons, episode of Hype Podcast. Hi, Pam.
Hello.
You are speaking to us on the road.
Kind of, yeah.
You're calling in.
Basically, yes. I'm still in LA, so yeah, that's the thing.
I'm so excited to hear why you're in LA and what you've been doing, etc. And we will get to all that stuff in How We Hype, because Pam is on very important fandom-related missions this week. Before we do that, though, as always, we want to start the show by reminding you of the contact information. We love getting tweets and emails and comments from you about anything we talk about on the show or anything you would like us to talk about in the future. And you can do that by emailing us, hype@hypeable.com. You can find us on Twitter @hypeablehype. You can find us on Instagram @hypeablehype. And yes, I did upload that picture that I said I was going to upload of the 100 people. So go check that out.
I saw it. I liked it. I was really excited.
Did you? Yay! Yes. It was good. It was a hype exclusive because it was a slightly different angle. Some of us had our mouths open or closed differently than the one I posted on Twitter. So very exciting. We have a Tumblr. That's hypepodcast.tumblr.com. We haven't uploaded it in a while, but I will say I'm proud to announce that we are one of the people who have interacted with those bots that Tumblr sent out that email. I don't know if you saw it. It's really funny. Basically, some of the people we were interacting with were bots. So we're not bots. We promise. Whether you believe us or not, however, is another story.
We'd be very sophisticated artificial intelligence.
We have been working on our software for a long time. There are many copies and we have a plan. Oh my gosh, and that plan is pop culture. I don't know where I'm going with this.
Exactly. We run on a steady diet of pop culture and coffee.
There you go. Oh my gosh. Maybe the Gilmore Girls were robots.
Oh my God, you've just cracked the code.
And they were copies of each other. This is a discussion for another time.
This is an AU waiting to happen.
I know. Oh my gosh, we should just go write that right now. Forget about the show. No, I'm obviously kidding. We have a lot of fun stuff to get into. We also want to tell you that we have a Patreon, which is patreon.com/hypepodcast. If you subscribe for $2 a month, you get a bonus segment every week. We have been recording them and you should be getting them soon. You should also be getting some videos from us as well as giveaways. We are working on a giveaway right now. We haven't finalized the details, but we have some stuff that we want to share with you all, and that will happen over on patreon.com/hypepodcast. That's also where we will be doing the extra stuff related to our Merlin rewatch that is not, you know, we're doing it. We're doing it slowly, but we are doing it. And we're getting ready to record 4 episodes, 4 and 5 of season 1. So stay tuned for that. And we will likely have a special Patreon exclusive bonus feature related to Merlin up within the next couple of weeks. So keep an eye on that. All right, and that's everything we want to tell you here at the top of the show. We're going to move into How We Hype now, where we tell you what we've been doing in fandom this past week. Last time, it was me who had been out doing stuff in real life. This week, it's Pam. Our servers have to charge in between real life experiences. Beep, beep. I don't know what I'm saying. You carry on.
I like it. I like it. It works. Yeah, you're right. Actually, last week, well, very fittingly, last time we talked, you had just come off of a very big The 100 related event. And now I'm kind of coming off of a similar event. I am in LA this week for WonderCon, which was this past weekend, and also for PaleyFest, which was this past weekend. And both of those are, you know, really, well, I was there for television reasons. And yeah, but they're also like both in their own way, very fun fan events. WonderCon is getting bigger and bigger every single year. They have it at the Anaheim Convention Center, which is very close to Disneyland. It's very cosplay heavy. If you can't make it out to Comic-Con, but you're interested in doing something a little bit bigger than some of the smaller pop culture conventions, highly recommend checking out WonderCon and seeing if it's up your alley. They tend to bring a lot of TV shows and a lot of people that work behind the scenes in movies and stuff like that. And most importantly, probably to the interests of all of you listeners here, One of the big things that I went for was to represent Selena in the 100 press room and also at the 100 panel. And it went really well. We have a lot of really cool roundtable interviews that Selena she's like the best guy in the chair. So the only reason we were able to get those up so quick is because she was at home frantically working on those while I was in the middle of doing more press interviews. And she kept working on them while I was in the panel. So even though I would have loved to have had her physically there with me, I think that we kind of made a really good team having one person on the ground and the other person in the chair. So worked out really well, I think.
One person on the ground, another person
In space.
Yeah. No, I want to say I am so glad that Pam was able to be there. I think it sucks that, you know, these things are happening and I can't always attend, especially at the moment, because I am trying to do more press specifically for the 100. But having Pam there is the next best thing because she does such a good job. And I think that everyone who's listening to this, who's a 100 fan, will definitely agree because that coverage was really good. And I think it is really cool that they screened the first, what was it, 15 minutes of the premiere? Was that the final number? There was some confusion there.
Yeah, well, because when we were talking to Jason in the press room, he said, you're going to get the first 20 minutes. And so, but then when we got to the actual panel, they were like, we're going to give you the first 15. So, you know, this and that, close enough. But the first 15 minutes are super intense. It's a really great way to kind of jump back into the show. And I think that it was really smart because, like, without giving like too much away for those of you guys that are trying to like frantically avoid spoilers so that you can experience it for the first time when it airs later on in April, it doesn't necessarily start like 6 years into the future, even though we know that that's the time jump they're about to take. So the first 15 minutes are set a mere 42 days after the events of the season 4 finale and focus solely on Clark. And it just gives us a really good insight into how she survived and like what she went through before, you know, we kind of catch up to her 6 years into the future.
I think that that is really, really cool. I think also like on that note, not to like make it to the 100, we have some of the 100 stuff coming like throughout this podcast. It's like a recurring theme, but I do also want to know on the spoiler note that as you know, if you've been on Twitter, that the press have received the first 4 episodes of season 5. I was like getting confused about the numbers here. So just like beware if you don't, because we had some spoiler issues last year. I'm hoping they won't be repeated this year. But just please be careful because this is one of those shows that are best experienced as spoiler-free as you can. So just try to make sure that you do that. But also on Hypeable, we will, as we did last year, be, you know, teasing the episodes a little bit. We do this with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as well as some other shows. And we will be doing that respectfully and carefully and just, you know, I feel like it's very important to say with the 100 specifically because there have been so many problems with it, but it's very exciting and I'm glad. I'm going to be watching the first episode of season 4 and getting to see those 15 minutes for myself. So I have been trying to stay spoiler-free from all of Pam's teasers.
Am I not even as bad as other people's?
No. I was like, tweet more, reveal more.
And I was like, I'm scared. I don't want to get in trouble.
No, that was good. Good strategy. That's always the best strategy. Do you have anything else that you, I know you did other stuff besides 100, but do you have any like specific, did you have any good like press room interactions or anything like that?
For the 100 or just in general?
Mm-hmm.
Both. I've gotten the chance to do the 100 press rooms twice now because Selena can't make it. And I think that Richard Harmon who plays Murphy is just so lovely. First of all, he always gives really insightful answers. Like the whole cast actually is really good and like really animated in press room situations, which is really helpful because a lot of times, you know, if you're going kind of all day at these events, you really need like that breath of fresh air and it's just nice to know that like they're excited to be there in some sense, you know. But I always really enjoy seeing Richard Harmon because he does this really adorable thing where he like runs around the round table and like shakes everybody's hand and introduces himself. And I'm sure it drives the publicist that's like assigned to him crazy because it eats away like at the time, but they don't start until he actually sits down. So it's okay. But I just think it's really cute that, you know, that's a thing that he does. And
it's part of it too. Yeah. Like Richard Harman is, I got to meet him as well in London and he's wonderful. He's such a polite, nice person. And I think that like, in press room situations, and you know this as well, like it goes by so fast and there's like a little bit of, it can get a little bit like mechanic sometimes. And I feel like stuff like that just helps remind everyone like, hey, we're all here, you know, we're doing a job, but we're also like human beings. And we, you know, it's just, it's really wonderful whenever a person, you know, an actor or something like that, like really takes the time to acknowledge that and to enter into the exchange, for lack of a better word, with that kind of attitude. So I think that is really great. Like, it sounds like a small thing when you say it, but I think it makes a big difference.
Yeah. Yeah. I just think that it's a nice way to show that like he's present there and that he like genuinely appreciates that we're all there to try and like help promote this thing that we all love from different points, you know, like from different points, like, you know, like they love it because they get to do it. The writers love it because they get to, you know, work on the story that fuels the plot. And then like we as like reporters love it because it's just a really fun show to cover. So it's just like, yeah, it's just really nice to get kind of like that acknowledgement because not that we're bottom of the barrel, but you know, it is kind of like, I don't know what I'm trying to say, but yeah, it's just really nice to be acknowledged that way. And I think it's really sweet that he does that. And then I also like, unrelated to the 100, but also related to a premiere that's coming up, I also did the press room for A Series of Unfortunate Events season 2 at WonderCon, and they only brought one actor. So they only brought Nathan Fillion. Oh. Yeah, but
That's cool.
Yeah, they also had the cast of Lost in Space there. I was not equipped to really sit in on those roundtables because I haven't had time to like research the show, and I don't like to go into these things like blind, you know. Mm-hmm. So I was basically mainly there for A Series of Unfortunate Events season 2, which I'm really excited about. And it was really cool that they brought Nathan Fillion, and he's just like really great. He's like a lovely, warm human being, and I adore him. And yeah, so he was really great. We got to chat with him for like 10 minutes, and I'm holding that interview until probably tomorrow or Thursday to kind of, you know, get some pre-hype before the show officially premieres on Friday. But you'll get that really soon. And he's just lovely. I've gotten to chat with him a few times before in the past. And he's just, he's just great. So good news for all of you Nathan Fillion fans. He's like exactly as you would think he would be in real life. And just like a lovely human. So.
Yeah, that's really, really cool. He seems nice. And it seems like I'm not up to date on that show at all. But I think my brother likes it. And it seems fun. So, and Nathan Fillion and Neil Patrick Harris back together again. That's always fun.
Yes. So we talked about that because I had read online that Neil Patrick Harris really wanted Nathan to get the part. So he put in like a lot of good words in the casting department. I don't think like they needed too much of a push, but he was like, we got to get Nathan Fillion because he plays Lemony Snicket's brother Jacques on the show. And and he just thought that he would be perfect for it. And so I asked Nathan whether he had like auditioned, whether the script kind of fell on his lap first or whether Neil, you know, recommended him first, like what came first. And that'll be up in the story as well that we put on Hypeable. So,
okay. So is there anything else you want to highlight from your big trip?
We're going to talk a little bit about Paley Fest and TV show of the week, cause it makes sense. But just so you guys know, I did go cover, the Stranger Things panel and also the, Riverdale panel. And then very quickly before we move on, I do want to plug something that I enjoyed on my drive down to LA, because from the San Francisco Bay Area to Los Angeles, it's about a 7-hour drive if you get no traffic. So that's a lot of time to sit in the car with your own thoughts. And I did listen to a lot of music, but I also have kind of been diving deeper into the podcast selection on Spotify. And one of the shows that I listened to quite a few episodes of while I was driving down is something that might be of interest to some of you guys listening, because I think we're all kind of Harry Potter fans. And I stumbled upon this podcast called Potterless. And this guy is like, I think he's like 25. He's like never read the books before. And so every episode is like a few chapters of whatever book he's reading for the first time ever as an adult. And then he has like a friend on who's like a huge Potter fan.
Oh, I heard one of those with Melissa and Ellie from Pottercast.
I think she's on an episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you like it? I thought it was really fun.
I did. Yeah. I thought it was pretty good. I only listened to the one episode because I just wanted to hear her episode.
Yeah. I haven't gotten to like her episode yet, but it was like a really easy listen. And it's kind of interesting to he's like this like unicorn in a sea of like a generation that's grown up on Harry Potter. So it's really kind of funny to see how the books fall on somebody who's like a little bit older. You know what I mean? Because like Harry Potter's not necessarily just for children, but a lot of the first few books are like very much children's literature, and they're light and majestic and stuff like that. So it is kind of funny to hear what a grown man thinks, and you know, he's definitely like giving like his opinion, so he doesn't like everything, but like, for example, I thought it was really funny that he was like, everybody loves Dobby and I don't get it because Dobby's such a jerk, you know, he's like, he is kind of like a little disturber in the beginning of Chamber of Secrets. And everyone's like, and then like the girl you had on in that episode was like, oh, just you wait until the end. And he's like, okay, I guess, but I don't know. So it is kind of like, anyway, if you're like into Harry Potter and you're looking for something other than like Pottercast, Mugglecast, Alohomora, those are like the three big ones that I feel like we interact with on Hypeable. I'm sure there are plenty more. But if you're looking for something else that's Potter related on the podcast front, I would check out Potterless. I think it's also on iTunes, but I just found it on Spotify because I was looking to see what else they had. So
cool. Okay, so I just want to do my How We Hype real quick. Now, this has kind of been a running joke, and Jewel, get your notebook out, / however you take notes. Don't worry, this will be in the doc as well on Hypeable. But I have been reading a bunch of books, and every week, either I'm not here, or there's something bigger going on. So I've like been slowly adding until I have now this, I mean, it's not that long, but it's kind of a long list of books, and I'm going to talk really quickly about some of them, and then I'm going to save, because the big series I'm reading at the moment is Sarah J. Maas's Throne of Glass series that I've read the first two and the prequel book, and now I'm on book three, and I'm going to wait to talk about that because I'm not done with them, but oh my god, I love them. I'm obsessed with them, and the main character's name is Selena, kind of, and it's cool. Anyway, I'm not going to talk about that this week. I'm going to talk about some other books. So back in January, I read a book called The Rewind Files by Claire Willett, who was actually a good friend of mine from the 100 community. Her name is at SkyPlana on Twitter. She's also at Claire Willett, which is a Claire with an I and Willett with two L's and two T's. And The Rewind Files is a book she wrote a while ago, and I've been meaning to read it, and I finally read it. It's very, very good. You know, it's always like awkward. It can be awkward when you're asked to read books by your friends. But this one is like legitimately, it's very, very good. It's like time travel. It's about the, oh my gosh, Watergate. I'm not American, so like some of the history accuracy stuff is maybe a little bit lost on me, but it's basically about this time traveling agency, and they go back and they change time, and they have to fix history, and they go back to fix like the Watergate scandal, and it's like a family affair. It's really, really good. It's really intricate. It's really smart. It's really surprising. I think because I read this, like the TV show Timeless annoys me more because it doesn't have that accuracy. I think we got an email or a tweet about that, so we'll get back to that later. But The Rewind Files, very, very good if you like time travel books. In my opinion, it's better than a book that I've recommended a while back called The Air Affair by Jasper Ford, which is like a similar type of vibe. But yeah, this one is just really, really good. So if you're looking for a good book, I can only recommend The Rewind Files. The next one I want to briefly talk about is one that I know that Pam has talked about as well, which is The Hate U Give by Angie Thomas, which is being turned into a movie. I believe it's Amanda Steinberg who's in it, and I think Issa Rae is in it as well. It's a very emotional, very moving, very, very beautiful, heart-wrenching book about like the current reality for Black teenagers in America, watching their friends get shot by the police, and just the powerlessness and the frustration and the anger and all of that is so beautifully captured in this book. And I'm so glad I read it, and I can only recommend that one as well. And then because we talked about it a few weeks ago, Fahrenheit 451 by Ray Bradbury, I was so embarrassed that I hadn't read it that I ran out and read it. And it's a really quick read because it's like kind of a short like sci-fi novel. Oh my God, I cannot believe I had not read this yet. I was really stunned. Like, the reason we were talking about it was obviously because it's being turned into an HBO show starring Michael B. Jordan as the main character, this fireman who lives in this dystopia where firemen actually burn books and it's illegal to have books, to own books. Everything has to be fact and there can be no such thing as fiction. And I think what this book does so beautifully, it makes you think about like what you lose when you lose access to imagination and to alternative points of view and alternative ways of seeing the world. There's a sequence in this book that's very stunning, which is the main character's wife. They're talking about where and how they met, and they can't remember. And the wife says, oh, well, it doesn't matter. And he's like, it bothers him that he can't remember it. And the reason he can't remember it is because it's a story that they haven't been telling each other. Like, it's the story of them that hasn't been written or told because they are just living this mindless life. And I just think that's really cool because I think at the moment, like, there's a real danger of swapping out reading for other activities. And I'm not saying that like other types of media can't be evocative. It's kind of ironic because this book is being turned into a TV show, and this book is kind of like anti-television in a way. So it's kind of funny. But I do think the act of reading is something that invokes something in you, and this book captures that very well and makes you sort of connect your ability to remember things and to process things and to understand things through your ability to read and imagine alternate versions of reality. So really, really cool. And then the final one, I just wanted to, this is kind of funny. So you all know John Green, the author John Green. I know John Green. I love John Green. I do not like John Green's books. And I don't know how you feel about this, Pam. I know I was listening to you and Kyle's podcast last week, and he talked about having read Turtles All the Way Down and really liking it. And I'm glad he said that because I was going to come up here and just absolutely like slam it. Like, I do not like this book. I thought it was boring. I thought it was terrible. I was reading it like, what the hell is happening? And then I remember that I have had this experience with like literally 5 John Green books. I think I've read every single one of them except for An Abundance of Catherines and like maybe one more. And every time I'm like, I really feel like I should like this book. And it's just not for me. And I really like John Green and I listen to his podcast, Hank and John something something, I don't remember what it was. I love that, but I'm just not a fan of his writing. And I think it's so funny, and I'm wondering if you've like ever had that experience where like you feel like you should like something, so you just keep consuming it until you finally realize like there's nothing, like it's not a bad thing, you just don't, it's just not for you, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, totally. I haven't read Turtles All the Way Down yet. It's on my list. It's like staring at me on my bookshelf. But I do. The funny thing about John Green is I feel like sometimes I don't like the like some of his like earlier more popular books. Like, not a big fan of Looking for Alaska or Paper Towns.
Yeah, no.
But really enjoyed An Abundance of Catherines and also The Fault in Our Stars. So it's like he's hit and miss for me. I think that what John Green is really lovely at doing is it kind of has like these like pockets of gold amongst his books. Mm-hmm. But I can totally understand like what you're kind of getting at, which is that they kind of tend to drag. So like with like Looking for Alaska, for example, which I know is beloved, I had to pick it up a few times before I finished it. And that was when I was like, you know, much younger, and I feel like it would have been a book that was way more targeted to me. So I think that's kind of why I've been putting off Turtles All the Way Down until I really kind of feel like sinking my teeth into it, because I know that in the past I've had a problem consuming John Green's books. So
yeah, same. he experiences life, I think, kind of similarly to me. And he, like, his characters, there's just something about it. It's like, it's a little bit of like a, not a Mary Sue, that's the wrong thing, but there's a little
bit about
these characters.
The manic pixie dream girl and boy.
Exactly. Yeah. And they all, like, they're all the same. Mm-hmm. Like, every single one of his stories, I feel like they're the same story. But I feel, like, bad because I don't want to, like, rag on him as a writer or anything like that. I think it's like literally just, I know a lot of people love them and I get sucked into the hype and then I just have to keep reminding myself. It's kind of like watching Marvel films. I'm like, almost every single time I'm like, yeah, no, like, why do I think I'm gonna like this? Although we are gonna talk about Marvel later and I'm probably gonna like that one, so it'll be okay. Anyway, those were just some of the books that I've been reading that I wanted to highlight on the show: The Rewind Files, The Hate U Give, Turtles All the Way Down, and Fahrenheit 451, that I think, except for the Turtles one, I would recommend the rest. So that's it. That's my How We Hype this week. That's the end of the show, guys. We've talked long enough.
I know.
No. I'm like exhausted myself by all of that.
I mean, all of these are pretty short news stories, so we'll be fine.
True. True. Yeah, they're going to actually, and some good news stories too. I'm really excited about most of these. The first one in the doc is Pam's. So why don't you go ahead? I'll rest my voice for a second.
Yes. So I hope you guys aren't tired of live action movies coming to Disney, because here's another title for you that's getting the live action treatment. We learned just last week that Disney's Lady and the Tramp is going to be made into a live action / CG hybrid movie, and this is kind of interesting, but also I guess not surprising. There's so many live action movies. When I was writing up the story, I actually had to like double check to make sure I remembered like how many entities are like coming down the pipeline over the next few years. And it's like exhausting just reading about all of these. The Hollywood Reporter was the first to report on this news, and they also announced that the film already has a director. So they're actually going to be working with Charlie Bean to bring this to life. And he actually just helmed the Lego Ninja movie. So kind of very familiar with CG, but also like children's entities. So that's good. And they also have a few bigger names behind the scenes. Specifically, Brigham Taylor has been tapped to produce the live action Lady and the Tramp. And he previously worked on The Jungle Book, which we all loved. So hopefully that bodes well. And that was also similarly a live action / CGI situation. One really interesting thing to note about this is that if you're interested in checking out the live action Lady and the Tramp, you will not be able to go to theaters to do this, because Disney is actually planning to premiere it on their upcoming live streaming. I mean, not live streaming, their upcoming online streaming platform. So we have been hearing about this before. That's why Disney's pulling their titles from Netflix. They're gearing up to launch their own online streaming platform to compete with the likes of Netflix, also Amazon and Hulu. And Lady and the Tramp is going to be one of those titles that's exclusive to their platform there.
Interesting. Interesting that it's going to be an exclusive. But I hope that that doesn't mean it's not going to be as good. Like, I hope we're not looking at, like, what was that movie about the dogs and the cat that were, like, running home, Homeward Bound? I mean, I love that movie. Don't get me wrong. But, like, I hope it's a little better than that. But it's interesting. I think it's going to be really interesting, because one thing is like, quote unquote, live action Lion King that we all know is not actually going to be live action. It's going to be like Jungle Book, right? But Lady and the Tramp could ostensibly be live-ish action. You know what I mean? Like that movie, The Life of My Dog, that one with the big controversy with the dog that kept dying.
Oh, A Dog's Life. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
It could be like similar to that, I guess, if they wanted it to be.
Yeah, they could just use real animals and like dub over their actions if they wanted to.
Yeah.
So you're right. I will say that like this is the other big movie that they actually just revealed is going to premiere on the streaming platform is the female Santa Claus movie starring Anna Kendrick. I don't know if you heard about this. It's called Noelle. And Anna Kendrick plays the titular character, who is the daughter of Santa Claus, who has to step into his shoes and make sure Christmas runs smoothly after he falls ill, I think. So it definitely sounds like they're trying to beef this up. I know that we've heard about like some TV shows that they might be premiering over there. But I think that in order to compete with the likes of Netflix, Hulu, and even Amazon Prime, we are going to have to, you know, start putting things on there that are going to entice people to come over and spend their money. So I'm not sure, though, like, even though these are all these two are premiering there, if they're ever going to, like, release them on home video aside from that. That's, like, the only big question I have, because I know that, you know, Disney does pretty well with, like, the Blu-ray DVD stuff. So I would assume that at some point we'll see them come out on digital.
Yeah. I hope so. I don't know. I was just talking to my uncle. I was visiting my uncle this weekend, and he was talking about, like, because he doesn't have internet because he's, like, afraid of it. And he loves watching movies. And he's like, the DVDs are disappearing. Like, where am I going to get my movies? Like, there's no more DVDs and stuff. So, like, I feel bad for him, like, that all this is happening. I want him to be able to watch Lady and the Tramp. So... I hope so. Anyway, it's what I'm trying to say. We'll have to wait and see. I'm very, very, very curious about Disney's new streaming platform. It's going to mark a big change, I think, in the industry. Safe to say. Moving on, we have another really cool story here for you. There's another trailer out for Avengers Infinity War. It's obviously not the first one, but it is a really interesting new look that focuses primarily on introducing main villain Thanos to us, which I think is, like, good, but also sad, because they have spent, like, they introduced Thanos in like half the movies, and we still don't know who he is because he's so obscure. And probably, unless they're really going to surprise us, Thanos is likely going to be the weakest link in this Infinity War movie, because he just, it does not seem scary. And in my opinion, this trailer did not really help make him more scary. The only potentially interesting thing is the obvious connection that he has to Guardians of the Galaxy's Gamora. Or what is her? That's not Gamora. That's the blue one.
No, that's Gamora.
No, right. Okay. Gamora, who narrates part of this trailer, which is a really cool touch. And she was obviously raised by Thanos as an orphan because he wiped out her race. He raised her along with Nebula, is the other one. That's the one. I got it right. Who's played by Karen Gillan. And obviously that quote-unquote human connection that they have could help to make Thanos interesting. That aside, I think that there's some really fun stuff in this trailer. There's some banter between, like, Peter Parker and Iron Man and Star-Lord. And there are a few glimpses of Captain America being badass. And there's some Black Panther stuff in there. I feel like it's a good sign that Marvel is realizing how popular Black Panther is. So they're, like, throwing as much of it into the trailer as they can. You even saw Shuri in there for a second, you know? I think that's probably the coolest thing about this trailer. What did you think about it? Do you think this gets you more hyped for Infinity War?
Yes, I think it makes me a little bit more worried because, and I think that they're doing it on purpose, obviously, because a lot of the uncertainty also lies with who's actually going to walk away unscathed from this two-part battle. So I am kind of curious to see, like, if and how this ends up resetting the Avengers universe, which could be a good thing for people that are kind of a little fatigued over it. So,
yeah, I'm just not ready to see Captain America die is my thing.
Oh,
is
that, of course.
I feel like he is going to die. And Chris Evans has said he's done with Marvel after the fourth Avengers, which technically is the next one. But everyone thinks he's lying. He's actually, like, dying in this one. He's definitely dying in one of them. And Bucky is likely going to be the new Captain America. And, like, that's fine. But it's not getting me hyped. I don't like seeing my favorite characters die. It's not my thing.
I know.
So, but aside from that, I am really curious who else they're going to kill off. Maybe Iron Man as well. I feel like it's his time. Maybe the Hulk or Bruce Banner at least. Maybe, I don't know. I can't really say. But I do agree with you. I think it's going to be interesting to see how they layer in the new era. And I am excited for some of the newcomers. I feel like the stuff with Doctor Strange and Spider-Man actually is probably the bits I'm least excited for, because Spider-Man just never landed for me for some reason. I feel like all his quips in the trailer are like really sort of like, it's very predictable dialogue for him, I think is my thing. It's like he's like a step, like a decade behind in terms of like the words coming out of his mouth, which is really interesting.
I could see that. I think that for me, like Spider-Man, I totally understand that. It definitely plays to the nostalgia factor of my childhood, because I think that this particular iteration of Peter Parker is very similar to the cartoon version of Peter Parker that I grew up with in the 90s. So yeah. I kind of have like a tiny little bit of soft spot for that, but I can definitely see where you're coming from as well. So
yeah, right. I get the nostalgia thing. Yeah, I'm totally there, and I'm not like trying to be like a spoil sport. I'm just like, for that and Thanos is probably the stuff that's getting me like anti-hyped, and then the rest is cool. Is what I'm trying to say.
I mean, that's not too bad. 50-50 is still,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. It's better than it could be. So Avengers Infinity War is actually coming out on April 27th, which is just a few days after The 100 Season 5. Wink, wink. So it's going to be a good
week. I already
week.
Have my tickets and in IMAX, so we'll see what happens.
All right. I don't. But I can see it. The Marvel movies come out here at the same time, so I should probably do that. Speaking of trailers and superheroes and teams.
Yeah, well, there's a whole new set of superheroes coming to the big screen in May. So just not long after Avengers Infinity War actually releases, we got another trailer for Deadpool 2. It's a red band trailer, which always makes things a little bit more fun and caters to a lot of Deadpool's strengths as well, because he is a little bit more raunchy than the, you know, conventional superhero. I think this is a really, really fun trailer. I really enjoyed the first teaser too, where they played around with breaking the fourth wall. They kind of introduce X-Force really well in this trailer and introduce Cable really well. We got a little taste of him in the teaser, and it just looks really fun. I'm really excited for this. I'm really happy that they moved it up a little bit, and I'm looking forward to checking it out in theaters.
Cool. Yeah, I'm excited too. I think it looks really good. I don't know if it's going to be as good as the first one, but I am excited. I'm looking forward to giving it a chance. I really like the Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants nod in there. It's pretty fun. The next story is really exciting. Actually, sort of in the Marvel verse, Tessa Thompson and Chris Hemsworth, who obviously starred together in Thor Ragnarok, are going to be starring in another film together, which is the Men in Black reboot. So suddenly things got a lot more interesting. We talked last time I was on the podcast about how they were going to like diversify Men in Black. The original obviously starred Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones, and they were going to have a white man and a woman of color, and that's going to be Chris Hemsworth and Tessa Thompson. And oh my God, I'm so excited. Like, these two are comedic gold. Chris Hemsworth is hysterically funny. And, you know, we know this obviously from Ghostbusters and the Thor movies and lots of other stuff he's done. Tessa Thompson is a superstar. Like, she is so fantastic. And she was by far, in my opinion, the best part of Thor Ragnarok. And she has really, really great physical comedy. And she just has really good delivery of her line. She has excellent chemistry with Chris Hemsworth. There's nothing like bad about this at all. I think this is going to be really good.
I totally agree. I was really into the idea of Chris Hemsworth doing this because, you know, as we've discussed before on the show and very recently as well, and as you just brought up, he's just really good at comedy and doesn't take himself too seriously. So I have no doubt that he'll be great in this. But then just to hear that Tessa Thompson's also just bored of the project, like, it's going to be so much fun.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to seeing what they do with this. You know, reboots are obviously hit and miss, but I think that they're on the right track with their casting so far. So
totally. And we should mention as well that this is not like, this is kind of more going to be branded as a continuation as opposed to a reboot. So they're not going to be playing agents K and J. They're going to be playing different agents, and it will be building on the universe. And they've also said that this is kind of like, I guess, the bad side of the story is that it's not necessarily going to be a body cop comedy as much as it is going to be more of an ensemble piece. So we'll see what But we'll see how it turns out. But it's got a good start. It's going to be directed by F. Gary Gray, who did The Fate of the Furious. And it will be written by Matt Holloway and Art Markham, who did Iron Man. So there you go.
All right. I feel like this next story is going to be, it's great for me, but I think we discussed before that you, Mr. Rogers is like an American thing and not very like.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Okay.
Yeah.
So in case we have any other international listeners, Mr. Rogers is really big in terms of like childhood nostalgia for most of Americans. He hosted one of the longest running children's shows on public broadcasting. So very similar to like Sesame Street, you know, it would kind of be on like the same block hour, if that kind of helps you like figure out like where this kind of lies in terms of television and age ranges and things like that. And it's like the sweetest show. Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood is just, it's like honestly like the most wholesome show that's probably ever been on television, but also really notorious is the wrong word, well known for tackling big issues from divorce to death to, you know, like desegregation and things like that, because it was just around so long that Mr. Rogers, or Fred Rogers, the host, was able to tackle all those through the decades. And they're actually releasing a documentary about Mr. Rogers called Won't You Be My Neighbor? And it's made from the filmmakers behind 20 Feet from Stardom, which is another wonderful documentary. If you haven't seen that yet, I would highly recommend it. It talks about the history of background singers in popular music. But the trailer is lovely. It really kind of gives you a good sense for what his show was about and kind of like the man that he was. I think that, even like as like adults, people get very emotional over Mr. Rogers because they remember, you know, the lessons of friendship and love that he kind of always taught on television. And yeah, just like one of the kindest public figures I think that we ever were lucky enough to have in the public eye. So I'm sure that you should bring the tissues for this one, because I was watching the trailer for it just before we started recording and I definitely got a little teary. And it just looks so sweet. And it's not to be confused with the Mr. Rogers biopic starring Tom Hanks, which is also coming out. So.
Oh, I did sort of have a sense that was coming out, but I thought it was this one. So I guess there's a lot going on. We have, we have someone in Denmark. She's called Hella Joof, and she's like fantastic. And she's probably like the closest I could get to a Mr. Rogers over here. So I feel the love. I feel the nostalgia. I think that's really cool. I hope you guys enjoy it. Okay. I have some stuff to say about The 100 because I love it and it's coming back really soon. We have some really, really cool new stuff to get into, aside from the stuff we already talked about for WonderCon, which is the two, actually, since I made this doc, two new trailers for season 5 have come out, aside from the first one. And the second one they released is fantastic. If you guys have not seen it, you need to watch it immediately. It's this artsy black background, black and white. The only color in there is red. And it's Octavia Bellamy Clark and Raven. And they're like just basically shooting like kind of stock footage slash stuff that relates to their characters. Octavia's on her throne. Raven is like screaming into a phone, which I think symbolizes her inability to make contact with the ground. Clark is holding a finger gun and she's saying like, am I a good guy? There are no good guys. And Bellamy and Octavia and Clark and Raven, they're all kind of like being layered into each other. And they are asking questions like, I used to be a leader, I used to be a rebel, I used to be an assassin. And they're asking, what am I now? Who am I now? What becomes of the commander of death when there's no one else to kill? What happens now? So the season obviously has had a 6-year-long time jump. So it's kind of communicating that nothing will be the same, and it's showing the premise of the show and the darkness of the show and the edginess of the show in a way that, that no trailer has done for the show before. It is extremely reminiscent of like those thematic trailers that they've been doing for Game of Thrones, like the Hall of Faces one. It also recalls the one they did for Lost back in the day for the British Channel 4, where they were all dancing on the beach and there were voiceovers like, I'm a murderer, a martyr, a saint, a sinner. It's a really cool trailer. You guys should all watch it. So it's very, 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 very cool. And I think it, for the first time, like non-fans might finally get a sense, without it revealing any of the plot, they might finally get a sense of what the show is and what it's trying to do. It, not everyone has loved it, but I love it. What do you think about it, Pam?
I think that it kind of starts posing all of the questions that if we haven't been asking ourselves about what we're going to get from these characters now that they have, you know, gone through a change that we haven't seen on screen, like questions that we should be asking, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
So, and I really like that they played around with that because, yeah, I think that these are all things that we're all wondering as we wait for the season premiere.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it really contextualizes everything without sort of, without giving anything away, which I think is really, really, really cool. There's also a third trailer that came out that was just kind of like a bit of a recut of the first one. It focuses a little bit more on the first episode specifically, I think, saying that having not seen it yet. But I think that one's really good too. I think my favorite of the three is still the second one. And then obviously the original long trailer. And then they also just released the poster today, which you might have seen at WonderCon as well, which is like half of the cast on top, on the surface, and the other half of the cast on the ground, mirrored, like underground, upside down. And it has Clark and Octavia at the front of the groups, like kind of mirroring each other, facing each other, kind of like, it looks like a deck of cards or like a card. And it also, you know, obviously there's heaven and hell in there. There's Clark and Octavia like versus each other slash mirror images of the same thing. You might start looking into like what characters are opposite each other. I'm going to be doing that. I'm going to be doing this like long over analysis of this poster just because I think it's fun to like go way into too much detail. What did you think of the poster? Do you have any sort of thoughts that stick out to you?
Well, first of all, I'm really jealous that I wasn't able to get my hands on one of these.
I know. I am
they were,
too. I
they were signing exclusives. So yes. Very lucky for all of those who were able to get one at the signing. But yeah, I think
but they changed a few from the signed ones, actually.
Oh, did they? Okay. I haven't seen the ones that they released online, but I did see the one that they put out there at WonderCon. But yeah, I think that this is again like super clever and like a nice little, I think, like, because they released the one that we've seen since this summer, right? With like the fire in the sky and stuff like that you likened very much to the Stranger Things poster, which came out after. So I think it's really fun that they kind of like stuck to those silhouettes, but also kind of put, you know, like even more of our characters underneath and stuff like that. I'm excited to read your overhaul though.
Yeah, I'm gonna like probably write that right after this podcast because I want to make sure that I do it before I watch any of the screeners for season 5 because I don't want to like get bogged down in things I can't say, you know? So it's gonna be fun. I'm excited.
And it's my turn, isn't it?
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Sorry, I forgot to hold myself down.
Oh my God.
This is what happens when you use new technology. Oh my God. All right. Well, we have a really fun story for all of you Broadway junkies. Dear Evan Hansen, which of course is amazing and a musical and all of that good stuff, is actually going to be published as a young adult novel, which is really cool. And it's coming out really, really soon. The novelization is actually going to hit store shelves and also probably like online digital platforms in the fall of this year. So I think that this is just really cool because I think that we've seen a lot of movies get like novelization versions, but I don't recall a time when we've seen, you know, novelizations come out of Broadway. I think that Hamilton has a few. Like, there's Alex and Eliza is like the young adult novel of Hamilton and Eliza's like love story and stuff like that. I've never read that one before, but it's just kind of fun to hear that Dear Evan Hansen's getting a similar treatment. The musical really deals with a lot of different really important issues that we should be discussing, from suicide to anxiety to depression and to the idea of belonging and stuff like that. All of these things are subjects that are bound to make for a great novel as well, and it's just really cool that they're getting a chance to do this for a story that is so lovely. Yeah, so I'll be excited to check this out when it comes out. I'm just trying to get like the official release date. Okay, Little Brown will be publishing it on October 9th. So
okay,
cool. Won't have too much longer to wait. Yeah, so it's just like a little fun thing if you want something to like as a companion to, you know, the original Broadway recording if you're a really big fan of that, or like even the musical if you were lucky enough to see that on Broadway, or if you haven't checked out either of those but you've heard of Dear Evan Hansen and you're interested in like diving into the idea of this story. I think that this will be really great regardless of who you are and if you decide to pick it up.
Cool. All right, so our second to last story in the doc is something that is near and dear to mine and Pam's hearts, and yet so far. Once Upon a Time, the show that we cannot stop quitting is finally ending, but before it does, we're going to have to quit it one more time because they are bringing back the original cast members, Jennifer Morrison, Ginnifer Goodwin, and Josh Dallas, who are, of course, Emma Swan and Prince Charming and Snow White. That's the one. It's been too long since I quit it last, so I can't remember. So as we all know, Once Upon a Time kind of rebooted itself or rebranded itself for season 4 by removing most of the main cast and following a grown-up Henry along with a new Cinderella and Hook and like one more person. I don't know if that was Evil Queen or someone else. But for the season 4-7 finale, which will be the end of the season, as I said, they're going to be bringing back the original cast to end it properly. And that's going to include, obviously, a reunion for Emma and Hook, who got married in season 6, and then something happened. I don't know. I didn't watch season 7. I have no idea. But I guess something happened so that they are not currently together, but they will probably be in the season finale. And it's going to be really great to see as well Snow and Charming, who were so lovely and whose relationship was kind of the glue of the show since the first season. Ariel, played by Joanna Garcia Swisher, as well as Mother Superior, played by Keegan Tracy, as well as Leroy, played by Lee Ehrenberg, are also coming back. Peter Pan, played by Robbie Kay, and Cruella De Vil, by Victoria Smurfit, will also come back. And finally, Regina's love interest, Robin Hood, Sean McGuire, is coming back, likely to give Regina a happy ending. So the two-part finale, Leaving Storybrooke, will air over 2 weeks, starting on May 11th and ending on May 18th. So Pam, are you going to go back and finally watch this finale and finish the show?
Yeah, because I do not know how to quit the show, and thank God ABC is helping me get out of this clearly abusive relationship. No, yeah. Seriously, like I at this point, you know, I did watch like I think 5 episodes of this new season. It was a really good jumping in point because they rebooted it all, so I didn't have to watch last season. And now that they're finally going to end things, I mean, I think it's only fitting that I too go out with a bang and catch up so that I can experience the final chapter for real this time.
For sure. Like, yeah, I have quit the show so many times, and I'm excited to do it one more time because I do have a lot of love for Once Upon a Time is the thing. Like, I feel like the show, the first season especially, was just really magical, honestly. And I think Emma Swan is such a cool hero. I cannot say this word. A hero who's a woman. And
a heroine.
A heroine. It doesn't sound like it's supposed to sound in my brain. So
yeah, because it sounds like actual heroine,
exactly.
Like the drug.
Well, we should not gender heroes anyway. She's a hero, a big damn
exactly.
hero. And I love her. And I think that the show just like it got really stupid and repeated itself and reset all the characters all the time, like a procedural, and it got really annoying. But the series finale should be really good, and we should do like a bonus episode for that one, just for fun. I'm not going to watch the rest of the season though. Like, I'm not that excited. Just the finale. Should be fun.
And we have one more story that is also relevant to our interests. You guys, Netflix answered all of our prayers. One Day at a Time has officially been renewed for season 3.
Yes.
Oh my God. How excited were you?
It was really scary there for a bit.
I know. I couldn't believe that this was not a done deal. You know, the show is getting so much buzz online. It feels like everybody kind of like that hadn't heard about it in the first season, like made an effort to tell all their friends about it. And everybody was tweeting about season 2. And it was really scary when the showrunner started tweeting out that like we needed to rally behind the show and in the hopes of getting it renewed. And so it was just really like, it was kind of like a sigh of relief when we found out just yesterday, actually, that it got picked up for a third season. So that's super exciting for everybody that is a fan of the show, including ourselves. And if you're not a fan of the show, definitely worth your time to check it out and, you know, watch it because it's so, so lovely. We've talked about like how much we love the show here before. So I'm sure you guys already know that we're big fans. So we're going to get 13 episodes of in season 3, and it's actually set to debut in 2019. So I'm assuming probably towards the end of January, because that's when we got season 2 and when season 1 originally aired, premiered on Netflix. So super cool. Exciting.
Mm-hmm. Super exciting. We're going to be discussing this a little bit more in our bonus segment this week.
Mm-hmm. And then one more renewal that I was also very excited about. On the same day that we heard that Netflix was picking up One Day at a Time for season 3, we also learned that Queer Eye was getting renewed for season 2. This is probably not surprising because Queer Eye really took the world by storm, and understandably so, because I've talked a lot about my love for Queer Eye as well in past episodes, but it's just such a lovely, heartwarming reality television series. And like you will cry, but you will also laugh, and you're gonna fall in love with like 5 gay men and just like deal with it and accept it and go along the journey with them. It's just, yeah, it's just so lovely. And I'm so happy that we're getting more of shows that I really think that we really need. Like One Day at a Time and Queer Eye are very different, but at the same time, they're shining a spotlight on, you know, people that don't usually get the spotlight shown on them, and they're just doing a lot of good in the world in terms of like tolerance, acceptance, and opening the doors for conversations that we need to be having. So I'm really happy that Netflix has chosen to bring both of these shows back, and I can't wait to tune in for season 3 of One Day at a Time and season 2 of Queer Eye.
Great. That brings us to the end of the news now, and we're gonna quickly jump into TV show of the week. I don't have anything. Not yet. I do want to talk a little bit about the screeners for, well, not The 100, although that too, but the ones for Lost in Space over on Netflix. But I want to wait until the embargo has been lifted. So we're going to hold that for another week or so. But you have something to talk about.
I have two things. Very quickly, just because we were talking about Netflix entities, I also checked out I had a little bit of downtime. I know, shocker. Well, I've been out here. And so I watched a few episodes of their new show, On My Block, which I've been really enjoying. I'm about 3 episodes in right now. It is a coming-of-age show, a coming-of-age series. It's 10 episodes long for the first season. But the reason that I kind of like it piqued my interest is because it's a coming-of-age series set in Los Angeles, in kind of like a rougher neighborhood. And all of the characters are minorities, and it kind of like it's just kind of like a little bit different, because I think we've seen a lot of coming of age shows from Netflix, and most of the ones that we have seen kind of take place in, you know, middle class or affluent neighborhoods. And so it's kind of interesting for them to kind of put this in. I think it's set in like East LA, because these kids, not only are they trying to like navigate things like boys and girls and like school and stuff like that, but they also have to worry about, you know, the gangs in their neighborhoods and things like that. So it's just kind of like a little bit refreshing because it adds another element that we don't normally get in coming of age shows. And yeah, I've just really been liking it. So if you think, if you're into coming of age TV stuff, then I would check out like the first episode at least. All of the episodes are about 25 to 30 minutes long. So it's pretty easy to kind of see if it's for you. But I've been enjoying it.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. All right, so we're
gonna... Quickly. Yeah, one more.
Okay.
I know we're running long. When I was at Paley Fest, they screened the Riverdale musical episode that's coming out later next month. So I did watch that, and I just want to say really quickly that I enjoyed it, and I was really surprised that they really, like, went for the... I don't know why I wouldn't think that they did, but it really is, like, musical heavy. I think that the auto-tuning on this episode is going to annoy some of you that have a problem with that. But other than that, it's thoroughly enjoyable. And the ending is going to leave you shocked. It's pretty intense.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's a good teaser. I love that.
Thank you.
It's very exciting. I hope... Nah, I'm not gonna say something mean. My God, I'm so sorry. I'm not gonna talk about the show. We're gonna move on now to listener feedback. We have some comments from hypeable.com as well as some tweets. So we are gonna get started with the comments. Do you want to get the first one from Miracle 2012?
Miracle 2012 wrote in about Timeless. We talked a little bit about that last episode, and they write, just think about the time travel aspect as a vehicle to explore other time periods, nothing more, nothing less. The history is actually pretty accurate if you ask the historians at the Smithsonian. The producers got awarded for showing American history on TV in the most accurate way possible. The Smithsonian Magazine also recently started a series of articles on to review each episode of Timeless Season 2. Teachers use episodes of the show to discuss with their students what actually happened at a certain point in history. I think that's what makes it interesting, that you always want to know what really happened and look it up. That's actually, you know what? I'm a little bit more intrigued now that you mentioned this, because I am a really big history nerd, but I just haven't gotten around to watching this. So, thank you.
Yeah, I think that I get that it's accurate. My issue is not so much that it's not accurate. It's just that they change the stuff and then they go back. And I think it's fair enough that you say, like, just think of it as a vehicle to explore the time periods. But I think that's easier said than done. I think for me, it is really important when I consume a story that the logic of the world makes sense, that not just our world, but their world. So if they say it's really important that we maintain, like, the point of the show is to maintain historical accuracy, and they then every episode go back and change things that by their own logic and their own rules should significantly alter the present, and it has no impact on the present, and I think that's annoying. I think that's a really lazy, sort of like convenient way of framing a story. Then they should have just said it doesn't matter. You know, they should have found a way to make that work. But that said, I do like their commitment to accuracy. And I do think when you can use a show like this to legitimately teach people something, even though I will say, again, as for me, as a foreigner, I cannot tell what's supposed to be real and what's not supposed to be real because they change it, right? So when they go back, there's a really good example. Like, they went back to really early on, they went back to stop Abraham Lincoln's assassination. I don't know all the details of his assassination, but I do know that in the course of trying to prevent history from being altered, they actually altered the way in which he was killed and who killed him. A few episodes later, they go back to the 70s, and when they are there in that time period and they are describing historical events that happened there, I'm thinking, okay, but if you went back and changed what happened with Lincoln, can I trust that what you're telling me now is accurate? Because it wouldn't be completely the same if you changed such a big thing. You know what I mean? So it's that. That's the process that I have issue with. But at the same time, again, it's great. And I've seen, you know, Abigail Spencer on Twitter, she's like, telling stories on her platform about women in history and stuff like that. I think all of that is fantastic. Like, I think all of that is great. But I still have an issue with that part of it. And, you know, I'm still going to watch it. It's fine. I don't have the screeners with Timeless, so I can't watch the season. But when it's on Netflix, I will watch season two. Allison says, hey, guys, I used to be a constant listener and frequent commenter. Yeah, we remember Allison L. But life kind of got crazy, so I hadn't listened for quite a while. But this is my second episode back, and it is so good to hear your voices, just like coming back together with old friends. I'm sure I'll be able to comment frequently with relevant and no longer relevant things as I catch up on old episodes. Yay! We're so glad you're back, Allison. We hope you enjoy. And we have a bunch of tweets as well, so why don't you just start with Lady Ash?
Sure. The Lady Ash says, latest HP movie response about Apparition just had me bummed. Everything about these movies is starting to feel so hostile to me, and I can't shake the cloud over it all. I feel like the Wizarding World is a place I no longer can enter safely. That's so sad. Anyway, yeah. She continues, don't mean to grumble at y'all. My best wishes to anyone who still finds the same joy in the world, but it's too much for this woman. I haven't seen the new trailer, nor have I any interest in it. This is my sign. It's time. And then she also says, also nearly done with Ready Player One. Not sure why people are so crazy about this book. Yes, nostalgia is a pull, but what else is this book offering us? A cool world, but trope characters. We had somebody when we did a Ready Player One special, and we had somebody on that also felt similarly. Katie, who is a hyper writer, and she's amazing. She also felt very similar. And I feel like, Ash, if you're like looking for more words on it, or maybe you don't need them, but if anybody is looking, I feel like she's written some stuff about it for Hypeable as well. So if you kind of go back and dig through our archives, you'll find it and maybe feel a little less alone. I know the movie's getting a lot of hype right now, but there are definitely people that are not super enthused. So.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I think that's totally fine. I also think that, like, on the Harry Potter stuff, I've been thinking a lot about this apparition. And I think my theory is that either it's the Minister for Magic apparating, because they are allowed to apparate into Hogwarts, I'm pretty sure. So either it's that, or it's, like, before Dumbledore set up the apparition stuff. I don't think that particular thing is necessarily going to be a plot hole, but I understand your general frustration and I share it as well. So yeah, I get it. Tucker Cronley says, I'm also excited for season 5 of The 100. Has anybody seen the trailer for the new Lost in Space? The visuals look amazing. Yeah, I was just talking about Lost in Space, but you know what's funny about that is actually some of the same people who worked on The 100 in the props department actually also worked on Lost in Space. So it's kind of funny that you mentioned those two together, Tucker, because there is a bit of a visual connection.
Katie says, listening to Hype episode 181, and I felt the exact same way about Winnie the Pooh as you did, Pam. I didn't realize I cared so much about it until I started tearing up during the trailer. Oh my God, Katie, I'm sure we're not alone in this, because I feel like more and more people are like, yeah, that one pulled at the heartstrings. Did you watch the trailer for Christopher Robin?
I did watch it.
How do you feel about it?
Good. Yeah, it looks good. Cute. It reminded me a lot of Finding Neverland.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's going to be similar to that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, speaking of movies Jude Law's in, Jessica says, I love Jude so much in Fantastic Beasts trailer. He completely won me over with that line of teaching Newt. It was so charming and warm and so Dumbledore. Perfection. Also his smile. I could just see the twinkle in his eyes. Yeah, agreed. You could literally see his eyes twinkle. It's amazing. It's magic. There's no other word for it.
Laura says, I'm battling a small cold, but I'm watching episodes of Alexa and Katie on Netflix. It is actually good if you enjoy shows like Red Band Society, but more funny and two girls as best friends as leads are worth a watch. Update if you like Girl Meets World or even Red Band Society, but definitely the show Girl Meets World. I think you will love Alexa and Katie. I think it's Alexa and Katie. Yes. Both super funny and very well done. Well, Laura, I've actually seen the whole first season because we got screeners for this on Netflix. And that's what I like to do when I can't sleep is I watch Netflix screeners in the press site. I thought it was really cute. But yeah, I think that like it kind of struggles a little bit to find its footing. It's a little hokey. But yes, if you definitely like good comparisons here, especially with Girl Meets World. It reminded me a lot of Girl Meets World season one, which is not my favorite, but I can definitely see the potential there. And the show centers around two best friends, one of whom has been battling cancer, is done with chemo treatment, and they're both about to enter high school. So they're kind of dealing with her cancer, but also with growing up and stuff like that. It's really cute, though. So I'm glad you like it.
Yeah, cool. Ellie Arnott says, just been to see Lady Bird. I loved it. Highly recommend it. Hopefully we'll hear you discuss it on Hype soon. Yeah, it's still not out here, Ellie. Like, it's coming out in April, I think, or May or something like ridiculous like that.
I feel like you're going to be going to the movies so much this summer. Between, like, Lady Bird and Love, Simon.
I know. It's going to be... I'm probably not going to end up going. Because you know, like, how it is? You've been waiting for it for so long, and it's been out in America for so long. Like, the hype kind of fizzles out for me. Like, it's terrible. I haven't watched Annihilation yet, because I'm just like, well, if the whole world's seen it, like...
Didn't it just come out in some territories via Netflix overseas?
Yeah, it just came out on Netflix, so I'm like, meh. It's terrible.
I feel that. It's kind of like, I felt that way, you know, I was like really like looking forward because I just think that the movies are so fun. Like I was looking forward to Pitch Perfect 3 and then it like came and went in theaters and I never saw it. And I think it was because it was like, well, I didn't see this movie, so why would I see Pitch Perfect 3? And so I just kind of like forgot about it. But there's like a lot of movies coming out. It's kind of getting hard to keep track. And I'm definitely a little behind as well. And I have no excuse because they all come out timely over here. So,
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Okay. We have one last tweet here from Mario, and I actually responded back to him about this, but he wrote, hey, ladies, I'm new to your Patreon and a quick question. Call me dumb, but I cannot seem to find the bonus segment, specifically the one day at a time. Any help? And Mario, this is my bad, but I'm working on it. I've had some computer trouble, but hopefully when I get back, we have figured out a way to do that, or I have figured out a way to do that. So should be all uploaded by Sunday, and you guys will be able to catch up. So...
Cool. And that brings us to the end of the news. So thank you so much to everybody who wrote in. We always appreciate hearing from you. If you want to write in about anything we talked about this week, or if you want to write in like just your own comments on pop culture related stuff, you can do that by tweeting us at HypeableHype. You can email us hype@hypeable.com. You can find us on Instagram at HypeableHype. You can find us on Tumblr, which is hypepodcast.tumblr.com. And you can go to our Patreon, which is patreon.com/hypepodcast. And you can sign up for $2 a more for $2 or more for a bunch of special bonus content. And this week's bonus discussion, along with the other bonus discussions that you should be seeing on the Patreon very soon, this one will be a short discussion about what we would like to see in One Day at a Time season 3. So we've already done our deep dive into One Day at a Time season 1, and now we're going to talk about season 3. Sorry, season 2, we love you. It's just how it worked out. Until next week, have a wonderful week, everyone, and speak to you soon. My name is Selena,
and my name is Pamela.